Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They'd have everybody throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
go
season.
Sack, guts, combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hey, everybody, we welcome you inside Patriots Playbook here for a Tuesday. And the Pats getting ready now for the AFC Championship right here at Gillette Stadium coming up this Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. My name is John Rook, and it is good once again to be a Patriots fan. Absolutely good to be a Patriots fan. Now, you have to admit that there's just a little bit of lingering disappointment over the results of this past weekend. Show of hands now, how many of you really thought San Diego would have a shot here, huh? See, that's what I thought. not too many. But the case is, as it has come right down to it, the fact is that I'm still trying to figure out how the hell Indianapolis lost the game. How did they lose the game? I went back and forth on Sunday. With my son having a CYO basketball game, so I caught the first half of the Colts and Chargers on television. Listened to the second half all on radio. Went back and forth between the gymnasium and the car radio. You know, I'm sure you've done that before. I do that a lot. Trying to get updates, and I'm still trying to figure out. You know, when I heard that both LT wasn't coming back into the game, and then especially in the second half when I heard that Phillip Rivers went down in the game, I'm like, okay, well, then it should be over. This thing's over. We'll get ready to play the Colts, and that's really what everybody wanted. That's what everybody wanted. They want the Colts. I mean, it's just deserved. A rematch of last year's AFC Championship game, a rematch of the game that was played earlier this season in the RCA Dome. I mean, you know, it's what everybody was looking forward to. How many different scribes, how many different writers have you seen online? I've seen two already today through the articles that I've already read today talking about the upcoming AFC matchup. I've already seen two writers basically exclaiming that this is the worst possible thing that can happen. The Chargers beating the Colts because it makes the AFC Championship and therefore the Super Bowl a fait accompli. It's done. It's over. Mail it in to the Patriots. Actually, three. Count on three different ones. Forgot to throw in Jay Mariotti from Chicago. They're all saying, this is over. It's over. Let's not go any further. Let's just mail it to them. San Diego beating Indianapolis was the worst thing that could happen to the AFC, the worst thing that could happen to the NFL, because everybody was girding for the one game that really seemed to matter, the defending Super Bowl champion against the team of destiny, against the team of the millennium, against maybe the greatest team of all time. It was the only matchup that made any sense. It was going to be the de facto Super Bowl 42 for the AFC Championship this next Sunday. And yet, the Chargers, they're like a cockroach. They just fell into the batch of potato salad and they messed it up for everybody else. Wow. So, you know, yeah, I'm surprised. I'm sure you're surprised. Maybe you subscribe a little bit to the Bill Belichickian theory of it doesn't matter who we play, we just got to play the next game, blah, 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 whatever. But, I mean, you have to admit that as you were watching the game, you had to be thinking, how is this possible? Or if you were like me and you were catching bits and pieces of it in amongst family duties on Sunday, you're thinking, how is this possible? And how is it even more possible? I'm still trying to figure it out. How is it even more possible that they won without LT and without Phillip Rivers? With Billy Volek at quarterback? Now, I don't want to necessarily, disrespect the Chargers or the players that came in because they deserve a tremendous, tremendous amount of credit. That fourth quarter drive that Volek led them on to take the lead was spectacular. Spectacular. His team carried him. Michael Turner had a heck of a ball game. Now we can understand why he was the highest paid understudy pretty much in the entire NFL this last year. And, you know, I can't believe that somebody wouldn't pay him good-sized bucks to be their go-to guy in an offensive backfield somewhere else in the NFL next year. By the way, how good would he look in a Patriots uniform? Just thinking out loud, you know. I mean, kind of have that already type of back in Kevin Faulk. But nevertheless, you know, the Chargers get the credit where it is due. They overcame extreme adversity to the point where they ended up pulling off a real shocker, and now they're going to travel 3,000 miles, and they're going to come in here on Sunday afternoon with about 15 degrees Fahrenheit of temperature. That's about what it's looking like right now. And they're going to try for a shot at the Super Bowl. It'll be their first shot since 1994. And has anybody thought about the twinge of irony here concerning a guy like Junior Seau, who, for lack of a better phrase, was kind of hanging on a couple of years ago, came to New England with a specific chance to perhaps continue his career for a shot at a ring, a shot at a title. Last year he didn't get a chance to play, you know, his old team when the Patriots went to San Diego because he had broken his arm. And now for him to realize his goal of trying to perhaps leave on the highest of high notes. I don't think you can leave on any higher a note than 19-0 and a Super Bowl champion. I just don't see that happening. But he's got to go through his former team, his former franchise, his hometown team. He's got to go through them to get there. That's a great subplot already, don't you think? Has anybody already noticed as well how nice the Chargers seem to be playing thus far? I mean, with the exception of who's the lineman that came unglued a little bit, started talking about how, you know, all the Patriots should be worried about us and such, and his name escapes me right now, but I'll think of it here in a couple minutes, and I'm sure somebody will email and let me know the same. But that kind of stuff has been nipped in the bud rather quickly. In fact, very quickly. Let's see. Who was that? That was old Igor Olshansky. Thank you. Igor Olshansky, defensive tackle. Got it already. Sorry. Hold those emails. And that LaDainian Tomlinson himself is talking about how, you know, they should be a big underdog because they're playing up against possibly the greatest team that's ever been assembled. And I'm paraphrasing there, but that's pretty much what he said yesterday. And so I'm thinking, wow, all of a sudden this is an about face. Somebody has gotten to these players and basically has said, in a nutshell, if we're to have any shot, you'd better not open your mouth. So you know what? Bully for North Turner, if that's who's doing it. Bully for the veterans in that San Diego locker room, if that's who's doing it. Because that's going about things the right way. I mean, you know. It kind of backfired again this last weekend a bit on the Jacksonville Jaguars, did it not? In a sense. You know, so, I mean, sometimes you just don't learn. Obviously, the Jaguars did not by letting a few things early in the week get out of hand, and I think that the Chargers are trying to make sure that there is nothing to hang up on a bulletin board about. Not that there would be anyway, because if they don't have Phillip Rivers and they don't have Lawrence, LaDainian Tomlinson, although indications are that Tomlinson looks, as of today, and again, we won't really start knowing officially until about this time tomorrow when the first injury report comes out, but it looks as if Tomlinson is more likely than Rivers. I mean, if Rivers doesn't have any mobility, I don't know how you can possibly play him. And I'm sure that will be a decision that will be made maybe as late as Saturday. So the quarterback situation will probably be up in the air all week long. I'm sure the players, you know, in the locker room down the hallway will probably, you know, say the perfunctory, you know, we're preparing for both guys, like they're ready to go. We're going to play as if they had 100% health, you know, and we have no other choice. And that's true. That's the correct answer. You know, they have to prepare for any eventuality. My guess is they'll prepare for Rivers to start, but they're going to have to get familiar with Billy Volek. And I'm sure they'll take a look at a lot of tape from a couple of years ago when he basically started half the season for the Tennessee Titans before he moved to San Diego. Try to get some idea of his tendencies. Believe you me, they're going to get plenty of looks at 43, Darren Sproles, especially after that screen pass he turned into a spectacular touchdown. Michael Turner. He's going to get quite a bit of attention this week in pregame prep as well, in addition to LaDainian Tomlinson. But you can certainly be rest assured the Patriots are going to, you know, they will turn over every stone they possibly can in getting ready to get to the Super Bowl and move to 18-0 and ultimately have a shot to realize their ultimate goal, which is, of course, to win the Super Bowl. Forget the 19-0. The ultimate goal is to win the Super Bowl. And now, of course, there is no turning back. Doesn't matter what they do. They have to win them all. It's 19-0 or bust right now. And I think everybody realizes that. Well, coming up on the program, we got a ton of emails to get to from earlier with the PFW guys. We'd like to get to some of those. For those of you that took the time to write them in, we'll try to answer the questions as best we can. Obviously, if you want to continue with some of the thoughts that you have already in your mind, please go ahead and forward the emails, webradio@patriots.com. If you are a newcomer to the program, if you are listening to us for the first time, if you are a Chargers fan, if you are a fan of another team in the NFL who just happened to stumble onto this because this is the only thing that's going on is we're down to the Final Four in the National Football League tournament, such as it is. Love to hear from you. Let us know where you're writing from, which team you follow, what are your thoughts on the Patriots coming in, what are your thoughts on the AFC Championship matchup coming in. Do either of the teams in the NFC stand a chance against either one of these teams in the AFC? It really doesn't matter. Whatever you'd like to bring onto the table, that is what we'll discuss today. There are a couple of things that I want to get to. And for those of you who are familiar with the program, Tuesdays normally we do a little nitpicking. Nitpick Tuesdays, as I call them. And even though it sounds somewhat ridiculous to be nitpicking on a team that has won 17 games in this season alone, that's what we do here. We nitpick. We talk about things that we'd like to be better. We talk about things that could use improvement. We talk about things that could potentially be an Achilles heel or a problem area or a potential cause for concern. We talk about poor performances that ultimately the Patriots overcame. It's all a part of Nitpick Tuesdays. I've got a few nits to share with you, a few nits to pick here today based on the game with Jacksonville, the 31-20 win on Saturday. By the way, I thought the weather was perfect. It did get colder as the game progressed, but I don't think it was anywhere near as cold as it's going to be this Sunday. And in fact, I don't know if you know this or not, but I believe there are a very limited number of tickets that are going on sale for this game on Sunday, I believe through Ticketmaster tomorrow. I believe it's tomorrow, Wednesday, tomorrow morning, I believe. So you'll want to check that out. Ticketmaster.com, I believe, is the site. But you know, if you don't have tickets and you really want a shot at it, I think you've got a limited opportunity to get in and get those next tomorrow, I believe it is, tomorrow morning. It'll be interesting to see how that all turns out and whether or not anybody can get online and actually select those. That's what's upcoming for Sunday. It's going to be a tremendous week. We'll have a lot of fun talking about it throughout the course of the week. We will definitely get to breaking down some of the matchups. I would love to have some back and forth with Charger fans. Now, this happened back in week two. Patriots won way back in week two here at Gillette, 38-14. It does seem like a lifetime ago. And I think all of the assessments of, well, you know, that was a different game. It was a different season, almost two different teams. I would say, yes, I agree with that. I really don't know. I mean, you might look at the game films of that game in an effort to get somewhat familiar with personnel groupings and maybe substitution patterns and what worked at the time, but I don't know how apropos it will be to applying towards a game plan for this week because the teams have changed. The Patriots have changed. Certainly the Chargers have changed. Chargers were on their way to a less than mediocre start. They were able to pull it around to 5-5, and now the Chargers have ripped off 8 straight wins coming in. Short of the Patriots, the Chargers are the hottest team and arguably the best team in the NFL right now. Right now. And that includes over both Green Bay and New York in the NFC. So, in effect, you could be having Super Bowl 41.5 this weekend. You could. Certainly conceivable. I know we'd be billing it as that if it were the Colts. And yet the Chargers beat the Colts. So why is it not the same? Why wouldn't more attention be put on the Chargers because they pulled off the unthinkable? Why does that not seem to make the Chargers more of a formidable opponent because they beat the Colts? They beat the defending champs. They knocked the Colts out on their home field in the Dome Stadium, where I'm convinced they still pipe in sound. I'm just convinced. It was so loud. I'm totally convinced, because you have to realize they don't even have 60,000 people in that dome. There's no way that 58,000, 57,000, whatever it is, which they have in that dome, there's no way that many people, that kind of crowd, makes more noise than in any other environment in the NFL. I don't care if it's closed or not. Just no way. There's 10,000 more people, 10,000 more butts in seats here at Gillette than there are in the RCA Dome on a week-to-week basis. Something's piped in there. And they overcame that, and they beat that, and they won. And now they're coming here. They earned it. Congratulations to the Chargers for that. Like I said, it flabbergasted me. I'm not sure how they won it, but they did. They won it because they all came together as a team. They all realized their roles. They all carried through with their assignments. Quick, stop me if you've heard this before. Sure you've heard it before. They did last Sunday what the Patriots have been doing all season long, and what the Patriots have basically built their quote-unquote dynasty on over the last 7 years. No one is larger than the sum of the parts. And that's exactly how the Chargers won in Indianapolis last weekend. Now, that should grab your attention more than anything else, as far as I'm concerned. They should have your utmost attention. They should have your respect. You know, we can trash talk and we can have fun here and go back and forth and jaw at each other over, you know, likes and dislikes and the differences and the outstanding points of both teams here, and which we will do throughout the course of the week here. But in all honesty, I mean, you know, it's very impressive what the Chargers did. Coach Belichick is absolutely right where that's concerned. They are impressive. They did the job. And I'm sure the Patriots will be ready for San Diego's best effort, without a doubt. That's what I think is fairly impressive to look at here. It's just that's saying something. All right, webradio@patriots.com is the email address, webradio@patriots.com. The telephone number, if you want to call in, you can do so, 508-543-7482. Again, it's area code 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. If you have a nitpick from Saturday night's game, that's really what I want to know today. And is it almost just silly to be nitpicking on a team that's 17-0? We've kind of danced around this. We haven't really asked that specific question this year. We've danced all around it. It's just sort of been a great unsaid, well, you know, we do it anyway around here. But now that you're in the playoffs and now you're one step closer to realizing the ultimate goal, and is it just stupid to nitpick? See, I don't think so. I think it's okay, because first of all, that's what we do here. It's all talk radio here. This is what we do. We all talk about things that could be better, should be better. In a perfect world, what would they be? How would it be going? And I've got a couple of things that I will share with you. I'm interested to know what your nitpicks are. I'm sure much of it centers around Patriots defense. Pretty hard to nitpick with anything right now that might have to do with the offense, I'll be quite honest with you. Lawrence Maroney, again, those of you that have followed this program all year long, they know that, I have not been a huge Maroney fan all year. I've certainly been legitimately concerned, I think, with his durability. I've never questioned his talent or ability. I think he has great talent and great ability, but my question was him staying healthy. And, you know, he's had some great games at the end of the year. He doesn't seem to be any worse for the wear. Of course, I would argue that, you know, he's probably got fresher legs than most because of some of the games that he's missed in the middle of the season. But the fact is, let's give Lawrence Maroney some credit. I've been banging on him and against him all year long, and now I'm going to give him some credit. He was tremendous Saturday. Tremendous. And you notice that the Patriots have been, how much difference a guy like Kyle Brady's health makes, and having a good, healthy, blocking tight end like Brady. I know he caught a pass on Saturday night, but, you know, they'll bring him in motion, and then they'll put him outside the left tackle, and they'll seal in the defensive line, and they'll spring Maroney to the outside. Now, that's something that the Colts did a lot of last year with great success with a guy like Joseph Addai. And that's something we've seen as well that the Chargers have done to great success with guys like LT who have the ability to get around the corner. And we've seen teams like the Cowboys do it with Julius Jones. And we've seen teams like Seattle do that with Sean Alexander. And I guess the reason that the Patriots haven't really been able to do that is because they haven't had a back whose initial intent was to turn the corner. We've had backs that want to stick their noses, you know, right up the gut perhaps. But the Patriots are doing nothing but running simple off-tackle plays that, you know, he turned one of them into a 39-yard gain on Saturday night. To me, that just sort of suggests a couple of things. Number one, he's finally getting it. A, he's healthy. B, he's finally getting it. He's taking what the offensive line is giving him, which I think is huge. That's a great step in the right direction. And if he continues to do something like that, then certainly you'd have to say that the Patriots' running game is no longer a concern. It's been something we've been nitpicking against, I think, all season long. All right, let's go to the phones. 508-543-7482. Carla is in Ware, Massachusetts. Hi, Carla.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
What's on your mind?
I think it's going to be a good game this week, and I think the Chargers are going to come into New England, and they're going to be ready for the Pats. The Pats are an extremely good team, and our family actually thinks that it's going to be a good game.
Are you going to the game?
I don't know yet.
You don't know yet?
I don't know yet. I haven't talked to my brother. He's in San Diego, so.
Oh, your brother's in San Diego.
I see.
Now, do you own season tickets?
No.
Okay.
I'm the linebacker's sister of the San Diego Chargers.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. So you think it's going to be a good game, huh?
I think it's going to be a good game. We are New England Patriot fans, our family, so, I mean, either way.
Well, so you're telling me then that you're not conflicted over this?
No, because we grew up New England Patriot fans, and, I mean, yeah, we're Stephen Cooper fans because that's family, but we win either way.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah,
I'm also a little bit flabbergasted over this. because honestly, I think you'd want to root for Steven, but I think that's kind of cool. How long have you been here? And how now did he? Let's see, where did he grow up? Because I don't have the record book in front of me.
He grew up in Wareham, Mass.
Okay, so he is a native. That's what I thought.
He is a native, and he went to UMaine.
Right. Okay. And so, because you've basically been Patriots fans for your entire lives, it's kind of hard to kind of change here in mid-go.
Well, I mean, of course we're going to go for San Diego, but, I mean, it's a win-win situation. If San Diego loses, hey, the Pats are going to the Super Bowl.
Right. That's true. And, of course, if the Pats somehow lost, then, you know, he'd be going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're playing Tom Brady, and as, you know, they have said, and all the Chargers have said, they're going up against an undefeated team.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, now I have to ask you, have you seen already or have you heard a little bit about what Igor Olshansky said already this week about, you know, catching the Patriots' attention and such? And what has Steven said about any of this stuff?
Steven hasn't said anything. I haven't talked to him. We don't talk to him. Last week we didn't talk to him. This week we didn't talk to him. I mean, he's getting prepared, and they have a long trip back to the East Coast, so you know, they need all the rest they can get.
When do you think you will talk to them?
Maybe when they fly into New England, we'll go see them before the game.
Yeah.
I don't know how busy their schedule is when they come into New England, so.
Right. Now, will you wear the powder blue 54 of Stevens, or will you wear a Patriots jersey?
Oh, we would definitely have 54 jerseys on.
So you're going to wear the 54 jerseys?
Well, it's good, because when we went to the Foxborough game earlier this season, you know, we had 54 jerseys on of San Diego, but I give New England fans credit because when they knew who we were, and they respect us because Steven is a New England native.
Right, okay. Well, that's good. I was about to say, you could also say, I just faded my Teddy Bruschi jersey a little bit. Right?
Yeah, he's wearing Teddy Bruschi's number.
Yeah,
hats off to Teddy Bruschi. We love you.
Absolutely. Very cool. Well, Carla, I'm glad you took the chance to give us a buzz here today and let us know what you think. I mean, do you think this is a game that San Diego can hang in, or do you really like the Patriots all the way in this one?
I think looking at Sunday's game and looking at all the players that got injured and the players that stepped up to the plate, I think that it could be a tough game.
So by tough, do you think it'll be close or just tough for like a half?
I think it's going to be close. I don't think San Diego's going to come in and, not be prepared. I think they're going to prepare themselves for the Patriots as best as they can. And I just wish them all luck.
All right. Very good. Hey, well, I hope that you get a chance to come to the game. And when you do get a chance to talk to Steven, that, you can wish him well for us, but not too well. You know what I'm saying, right?
I know.
Completely. Thank you, Carla.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Right, so there you go. Carlin Wareham, who is Stephen Cooper's, we said sister, right? Yeah. Stephen is a linebacker in his fourth season with the Chargers, a free agent. He signed 4 years ago out of Wareham, Mass., and he went to the University of Maine. So there you go. So we got a little bit of a New England flavor, I guess, to the San Diego Chargers coming in here this weekend. Oh, that's kind of cool. Very good. Just shows, just goes to show you who's listening out there. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. Let me give you a nitpick, my own nitpick for Saturday. While I've already complimented Lawrence Maroney and taken back some of what I was saying about him earlier this season, again, for those that follow the show regularly, the problem that I have with this football team right now is certainly, like many of you, it has to be on the defensive side. I don't know, and I guess specifically speaking, without being privy to the game plan, I'm not sure what was originally intended in trying to allow Jacksonville to have one thing as opposed to another. I thought the secondary last Saturday night was incredibly soft. It seemed to me that there were plays to be made, and that obviously they did make them in the second half. They adjusted, they got tighter, they played tighter coverage on the receivers, and they didn't give near as many big plays on the wide receiving core of Jacksonville in the second half as they did in the first. Witness the fact they only gave up 6 points as opposed to the 14 points they gave up in the first half. So, yes, adjustments were made, but why was it that way to begin with? Was the thought process that we were going to gear up and stop the run and that we're going to make David Garrard beat us? Seems to me that that had to be the case. And Garrard damn got close enough to do it, didn't he? He really did. You got to give David Garrard a lot of credit for last Saturday night. He kept his team of the game. He took what the Patriots defense gave them to the point where, that drive on the opening drive of the football game was a shocker. What did we talk about here on the program last week? We talked about, to me, the first quarter was going to be key. In fact, the play of the game might be the coin flip, because the team that won the coin flip was most definitely taking the ball because they desperately wanted to get on the score first. And that's exactly what Jacksonville did last week. Took the opening kickoff, marched it right down the field, And it didn't even seem like the Patriots' defense was out there. And so I knew right from the get-go, after they scored that opening touchdown, I said, we're in for a ball game here. Now, ultimately, the Patriots were able to overcome that because they did adjust. But to me, I'm just thinking, wow, how could – you have to be able, I think, to be able to adjust on the fly a little bit more, and I realize that you go into the halftime locker room with a concerted effort to specifically adjust, but got to be things that you can do a little bit more. And maybe it's only because there's still a half of football to play, and let's let our game plan play out a little bit more, but I just have to admit, it was shocking. So I'd be curious to note this coming weekend what the game plan might be for the Chargers. Do you let Billy Volek beat you, if, of course, he is the starter? Or do you come after a guy like Philip Rivers with your ears pinned back and you just blitz him until he can't see anymore? Or do you make, or do you check those receivers and you make a somewhat hobbled, LaDainian Tomlinson beat you? There's a lot of good subplots, I think, coming into the game this weekend based on what we saw last weekend. But certainly my biggest nitpick has to be with the pass defense. Eugene Wilson was inactive this last week. I think that it's entirely plausible that we've seen the last of him in a Patriots uniform. I thought Asante Samuel was mediocre at best, maybe not even that this last weekend. And as I've said from the early part of this year, after he first reported to this football team, I don't think there's any way he comes back next year. Patriots will not pay him what he is going to be able to get on the open market. So right then and there, you've got two replacements ready to be made. Perhaps Brandon Merriweather is ready to step up and play safety. And so maybe you take care of one of those slots with him. I'm beginning to think that's more the case, because he certainly seems to be getting more and more time, especially in nickel and dime packages in the secondary, and I think that's probably a good thing. I think Randall Gay was really lucky on a couple of instances. And while I know we've seen him do it in the past, I'm not entirely certain that he's the answer at corner either. So I'm going to throw in an extra little something-something here in the equation. All right? For those of you draft Knicks that are already looking ahead to that seventh pick overall in the draft coming up in April, don't be surprised if you see the Patriots go DB. Now, seven pick overall is probably a little high for that. Jim Laurinaitis learned yesterday has decided to stay at Ohio State for his senior year, so he's not going to be eligible for the draft. And that was a name that a lot of Patriots fans I know had considered at linebacker. But he's not going to be available this year. I'm still thinking even at seven, the Patriots might have a tendency to trade down. And they also, if a linebacker to their liking isn't available, then look at him to go DB. I still think that Howie Long's kid at the University of Virginia is a quintessential rush lineman that can be converted into a linebacker. And the Patriots certainly have had some practice and some success in doing that with a couple of their players, most notably Vrabel and Bruschi. So don't be surprised if that young man is still up there, but I don't know if he's around at seven. Just some food for thought here to kind of throw out. But as far as my nitpick is concerned, my biggest problem is with the secondary. I don't so much have a problem with the linebacking core. I don't have so much as a problem with the defensive line. I think they've been pretty consistent, fairly solid. Obviously, I think we'd all like to see more pressure on the opposing quarterback. I don't think that that was where it needs to be based on what we saw against Garrard and Jacksonville, but there are two things. Number one, you can't afford to come out and go after the quarterback with all-out pressure if you're playing a run-stop defense. If you're geared up to stop the run, which the Patriots did do, then you're not really coming after the quarterback. So that's number one. Number two, Garrard has tremendous athleticism. He was able to slip up into the pocket all night long, and he was able to make good plays because he's mobile. I don't know that that's going to necessarily be the case this Sunday, because if you've got a wounded Phillip Rivers, I don't know how adept he's going to be able to step up into that pocket. Number two, Billy Volek, well, you know, enough said about that. Well, I think I'd like to see the Patriots just play this one straight, at least right now. Come after the quarterback. Come after him. I don't know. That may change as the week progresses. The more we think about it and the more we hear, you know, the talk and some of the breakdowns of the X's and O's of these two teams coming up on Sunday, that may change. But at least that's my initial reaction. I'd love to know what your nitpick might be of the now 17-0 New England Patriots would be. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Patriots, of course, had Tom Brady set the all-time NFL record for highest completion percentage in regular season or playoff game with his 92.9 completion percentage, 26 for 28. I mean, man, and the two misses were drops. I don't know how you can get any better than that. So certainly can't nitpick anything that Brady did or didn't do. Lawrence Maroney, as we've already talked about, I mean, 122 yards on 22 carries and a touchdown. His first career 100-yard game in the playoffs. Third highest single-game rushing total in Patriots playoff history, that 122 on the ground. Most since Corey Dillon had 144 against Indy back in 2005. Benjamin Watson had two touchdown passes, tying a Patriots playoff record for most touchdown receptions in a game. They were his only two catches of the game. Harrison had his seventh career playoff interception. That ranks fifth all-time. Patriots did turn the Jaguars over twice while not turning it over themselves, which I thought was key. And certainly that interception helped slam the door shut on the Jaguars in the fourth quarter. What else? A lot of other, you know, individual superlatives. Brady threw a touchdown in 13th straight playoff game. Welker caught his first career playoff touchdown pass in his first career playoff game for the NFL co-leader in receptions this season with 112, and Wes Welker. Ty Warren's strip sack of Garrard causing him to fumble in the first quarter. Set up the Patriots' go-ahead touchdown, which certainly, to me, that was the single play of the game. If you had to boil it down to one play that made a difference in Saturday's game, it was Warren's strip sack of Garrard and Vrabel's recovery, because that changed the momentum. The Patriots had just tied the score at 7-7, and certainly the Jaguars were looking to march the ball right back down the field on a soft Patriots defense. Until Warren got involved, Vrabel recovered, and the Patriots took it in. And then from then on, even though the Jags did end up tying it up at 14 at halftime, from then on, though, the Patriots set the tempo. And even though it was tied at halftime, the Patriots knew what they had to do. They had the first possession of the second half. They would come out. They'd move it down the field. They'd take advantage of it. They'd get the edge on the scoreboard again and force the Jaguars to play from behind, which is exactly what they did. That one play by Ty Warren turned the momentum. What momentum Jacksonville had, it was like a slow leak in a balloon from then on out after that strip sack and the fumble recovery. And, of course, the air finally leaked out in the fourth quarter with Harrison's interception. And playoff games are magnified to where individual plays really make a difference. And, of course, that will again be a huge factor in this Sunday's game. Turnovers are magnified. And there was a turnover that was huge, absolutely huge in the overall course of things this past Saturday. And we'll be looking for something significant like that to happen this next Sunday in the AFC Championship. I also thought that even though it led to a field goal, the Brady's bit of ad-lib on a screen pass that was taken away, and then that 53-yard catch and run to Dante Stallworth in the fourth quarter was a huge play as well. Big play on the offensive side, because they had been dinking and dunking all day against a Jacksonville team that was content to let the Patriots have the short stuff, but they were not going to be beaten. And they certainly did take Randy Moss out of the equation, did they not? That's why you need to have somebody else that can do it. And Stallworth proved that he could be that someone. 53-yarder. Fifth longest catch in team playoff history. Longest, by the way, 73 from Deion Branch, Drew Bledsoe. That was Terry Glenn from Drew Bledsoe. The longest 73-yard Branch from Brady in 2006. So there you go. Patriots allowed opening drive points in the playoffs for the first time since 1998 on that opening drive that Jacksonville had. Now, that's got to give San Diego a little bit of comfort, knowing that at least it can be done. Even if they don't do it, it can be done. Patriots overcame a Steven Gostkowski missed field goal, and he came back and did hit one later as part of the 11-point margin of victory. I'm not ready to say that that's really something to nitpick on just yet, but fact remains that was a factor in the outcome of the game. So, anyway, that's a bit of a recap over what happened in the Jaguars in the divisional playoff game. And if you have some additional thoughts on the Jacksonville game, I'd certainly welcome those at this time as well, simply because we'll be moving along and focusing on nothing but the AFC Championship. If not later today, then certainly by tomorrow. Webradio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. All right, let's get to a couple of emails. This one comes from William. Says, wow, halftime had me worried, especially when Jacksonville had been picking on Randall Gay all day, and he was sloppy for a while in the secondary, but Tom was nearly perfect. And those trick plays were awesome, especially those double whammies. Hobbs had limited play in the game and did not know he was injured, and the way that he could not impact the game more. That's also true. I don't think anybody really knew how Ellis Hobbs was going in. I mean, he wasn't a scratch, but he obviously did not play much at all. So I think that that's I think that could also be potentially a cause for concern. All right, this one comes from Pats fan in San Fran. Which would you rather see? The look on Bill Polian's face when Peyton Manning's last pass of the season went through Dallas Clark's hands, or the look on Tony Romo's face when Jessica Simpson tells him she's decided to start seeing Eli Manning? That's actually pretty funny. That's good. I like it. I don't know which one I'd rather see, to be honest with you. I'm not sure I'm a big Bill Polian fan, so I'm probably Polian. Let's see. Steven, not sure if you received this a million times. I know it's gaining in popularity. I think there's some real cool parts of this song that could be used to pump up the players in the crowd this Sunday. All right, well, we'll let Gary take a look at that one and see if that's doable here, Steven. Thank you. PJ sends this one. He says, I just wanted some information from football experts, but since I don't really know any, here goes. It's sort of a backhanded compliment, don't you think? Someone whose name I didn't catch and covers the NFL was on a local radio station talking about the games over the weekend. He said that LaDainian Tomlinson was cleared to play by the team doctors but didn't return because of a player's decision. This person said that he checked it three times because he couldn't believe what he saw. That sounds very odd to me. We always hear about a player's helmet being taken away from them to keep them off the field. Does not playing, even when you are cleared to play, happen more often than we know? Don't get me wrong, he has to be comfortable with his decision to play or not, so I am not ripping him, but it did seem kind of odd because the game was so big. Well, I honestly don't know of too many instances where that really happens. I've heard of it happening before, that, you know, the doctors say a player could go, but the player chooses not to go. I mean, ultimately, the player is the only one that can tell you because the doctors can't get inside a player's head. But that is a bit of the antithesis to, you know, keeping players off of the field, I suppose. A player choosing in his own right not to return, even though the doctors have said he can return. I don't really know what to make out of it. Yeah, it does seem kind of odd. I'll agree with you, PJ, because the game was big. I mean, the argument that he might be saving himself didn't really wash because, quite frankly, you didn't know that they were going to win the game. So you might as well just let it all hang out and then, you know, and then see what happens thereafter. My guess is, though, if the player is making the decision, in this case, Tomlinson, that, you know, he just something, quote-unquote, didn't feel right, even though technically the doctors on the sideline couldn't really find anything that would cause them to say, oh, you're going to hurt yourself further. That's a weird one, I'll admit with you. Also after the game, he says, when Rivers was asked whether he would play against the Pats, he said he probably would and that he could have gone back into the game on Sunday. What does that mean? I've heard players say that if it were the playoffs, they could have played. Well, this was the biggest game of the season. Volek played okay, but he wasn't lighting the world on fire enough to keep Rivers on the bench, at least I don't think. Anyway, I was just wondering your thoughts. I think a lot of the same things, PJ, as I mentioned about LT in this particular instance. Except I'm guessing that because Volek had been in there and led them to the go-ahead touchdown, they probably said, Lyre, let's hold off on you going back in. We got the lead here. Let's wait and see what happens. And then if we need you in the end of the game for a last-second drive, perhaps, maybe, we'll just, you know, see how it goes. My guess is that the Tomlinson and the River situations were a little different. That's all I'm guessing. And again, it's just a guess. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania. Do you think the new philosophy in the NFL is that offense wins championships? With the new rules in the league, which help the offense, do you agree that teams will focus more on the offense, as the Patriots and Colts have done, and just make the opponent matches point for point in their game plan? An average defense will hold an average offense. Patriots have shown the league what can be done with greatness on offense with all the different formations and receiver options. How can a defense possibly game plan to cover all of the different looks that a great offense can throw at them? Then let the defense do their job. Just don't hold, interfere, face mask, or hit 5 yards or more off the line. Well, see, I think that this, whether it's a new philosophy or not, I think it's a little bit of a misnomer, Mike, because, you know, the old adage that defense wins championships really is sort of overrated. Fact is that some of the greatest defensive teams of our modern times have been also associated with some of the greatest teams, like the 85 Bears. That certainly comes to mind. But if you look in the last decade, for instance, statistically speaking, the top defenses in the league aren't Super Bowl champions. But there have been some top offenses that have gone on to become Super Bowl champions. So I think this trend that you talk about, this philosophy, isn't necessarily a new philosophy. In fact, I think Cold Hard Football Facts, we talked about this a few weeks ago, where offense certainly is predicated in having a potential for an explosive offense certainly helps your chances in terms of being a Super Bowl contender as opposed to having a dominating defense. And we'll get into some of that again in a little bit. Let's take a timeout here. Webradio@patriots.com. Again, is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482. A little nitpicking to do on a Tuesday? How can you nitpick when you're playing for an AFC championship? I know how we can, and we'll do it. Coming up.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Dumoulin's Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free exclusively from the New England Patriots. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9920. To get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Sometimes the best laid plans just don't work out the way you like them to. Right, Jace?
I hate computers.
What was it you were trying to play?
Radio Nowhere, Bruce Springsteen.
Ah, see? Okay, yeah, that would have been good. But, hey, I understand what it is. Welcome back as we continue with Patriots Playbook here on a Tuesday before the AFC Championship game. Pats and the San Diego Chargers. That's right. I said San Diego Chargers. Coming up this Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time here at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We got a ton of emails, so we'll eschew plans for other things. We'll save some of the interviews that we have coming up for tomorrow and Thursday's program as well, because I want you guys to carry the show. Everybody's excited, rightfully so. Everybody has their nitpicks, and that's what you're supposed to have on a Tuesday, because that's what we do on Tuesdays. We try to pick nits. We try to find things wrong. We try to come up with things that could be better, could potentially hurt the team, hurt the Patriots, be a potential Achilles heel. We come up with these things. We manufacture these things just so we can talk about it. And because if it does happen, then we can say, ah, yeah, remember, this is what we talked about. Fact is, though, is that every nit that we've picked this year, this Patriots team has overcome every stinking one of them. That's why they're 17-0. That's why they're playing for an AFC title at home, no less. And that's why they're a prohibitive favorite not only this weekend, but they'll be a prohibitive favorite should they win this Sunday. They'll be a prohibitive favorite in Super Bowl 42. That's just the way it goes. But that's why we like to do things, because we do have to have things to talk about. What could be better? How could this team potentially improve? Is it possible even to improve on perfection? Think about that for a second. Are we being somewhat, presumptuous here by talking about improving on perfection? Because that's what we have here. We have 17-0 thus far. But I guess until you get to 19-0, you can always improve, right? I mean, doesn't it stand to reason that that is logical? Todd sends this email. He goes, I know that they play on opposite sides of the field, but do you think North Turner will put Cromartie on Moss? And if so, what do you think Cromartie's chances are being able to shut down Moss? If Moss gets shut out for a second time, will Watson need to have a repeat performance? If Watson continues to catch with his arms while keeping his eyes closed, he might just turn into what everyone has been hoping for. He sends a photo of the touchdown catch with his eyes closed and catching the ball with his arms in the back of the end zone on Saturday. You know, Todd, honestly, I don't know that they're going to take a chance on Cromartie matching up with Moss. I don't know that they do that, even if they can. I don't know that they do that. I mean, fact is that looking at the way that they've got the two deep laid down here, Cromartie certainly could match up against Randy Moss. And because Cromartie has 10 picks on the year, and because he is a Pro Bowl player and you're going against a Pro Bowl receiver, I'm not sure why San Diego would even think about not doing that. Don't you want to put your best up against the best? I'd personally be stunned if we didn't see Cromartie go up against Moss. I think that's one matchup that a lot of people would really look forward to. But to answer your question, yeah, that would certainly make guys like Watson and Welker and Stallworth and Gaffney that much more important to the overall scheme of things, to the game plan. We saw that this past Saturday. Welker came up big with two touchdowns. With big catches. He had a touchdown. Watson had two touchdown catches. Stallworth had the big play. Gaffney had a couple of big catches. So, sure, they took out Moss. Fine, that left the other guys open. That's what happens when you have options. You got to have options. Alex from Munich, Germany. John, last week you said the first quarter was the important part of the game for either the Pats or the Jaguars. Still, the Jaguars played a great first quarter and a great first half, so why couldn't they transform their first half playing onto the second half? Because the Patriots made adjustments, Alex. I don't think they played as loose in the secondary in the second half as they did in the first half. They made, I think, more of a concerted effort to get up on the receivers, to not allow them open, unencumbered looks, playing them tighter, limiting, I think, the bigger plays. They just made adjustments. It's that simple. He says, for this week, I want the Packers to advance into the Super Bowl because then we will have a Super Bowl 31 rematch. I was 6 years old and just moved to America when I watched that game, and even though the Pats lost the game, I became a huge Pats fan for life. Alex in Munich. Well, I think there'll be a lot of people, Alex, that will root for that simply because you'll have the whole Brady versus Favre thing, and then we'll get 2 weeks of Brady and Favre stories and how everybody loves Brett Favre and how everybody loves Tom Brady, and we'll probably all get sick of it. But I think if you really want the chance for some angst and you want a chance for some good rivalry and some good back and forth and some trash talk and all that kind of stuff, I think you got to root for the Giants, because then you'd have the whole New York, New England thing going. You'd have the rematch of that 38-35 game to end the regular season, which the Giants played, you know, arguably best game that certainly anybody has played against the Patriots this year. And I'm sure they'll think, well, you know, we got another shot at them. We came close last time. Who's to say we can't beat them this time? So if you're into that kind of thing, then yeah, I think you'd root for the Giants. And if the Giants can win a couple of games on the road, which is what they would end up doing, especially beating Green Bay at Lambeau, then why couldn't they beat the Patriots on a neutral field, you know? So depends on your perspective, I suppose. Depends on your perspective. James, our friend in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, says, I hope I got this right, but after doing some research, I've discovered the following. In the 32 years, he's going to send us some numbers again. In the 32 years since 75, when the NFL started designating the top playoff seed in each conference, there's only been 4 years that both of the top seeds failed to make it to the Super Bowl, 79, 80, 92, and 97. In two of those 4 years, in 79 and 97, one of the two teams that defeated the top seed was also a defending Super Bowl champ. In 80, the Raiders were recent Super Bowl champ, and in 92, the Bills were making the second of their four straight trips to the Super Bowl. I think for this to happen again, at least one team needs to have a recent Super Bowl experience. The Patriots are the only team left in this year's playoffs with that experience. Interesting, James. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right, let's go here. We'll kind of run through some of these because some of these were also intended specifically for the PFW guys, so we'll leave those around because we've got a ton of them to get to today. We know that Bill Belichick, this is Andrew in the Ukraine. Hello, Andrew. Welcome to the program. We know that Bill Belichick doesn't draft linebackers. My question is, are there any inside linebackers available in free agency? All the big names like Briggs are outsiders. Well, first of all, I don't think the fact that they don't draft linebackers is necessarily accurate. I think what they do is they look for players that could potentially play linebacker. That being said, you'll probably, if you have any knowledge of the Patriots at all, Andrew, you know that the Patriots will oftentimes take guys who could necessarily who could have been inside linebackers and train them to play outside because they like their linebacking core to be versatile. So just because they don't play inside linebacker or because they, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean they won't end up there. They like guys that can go both ways. You know, Adalys Thomas is on the outside now. He started this year as an inside linebacker. You know, he's been an edge guy much of his life, but why did the Patriots stick him on the inside? Because they wanted him to understand how to play this defense. And the only way to do that was to learn from the inside out. Now he's perhaps a smarter player because of it, even though he's had to move back down to the outside simply because of Roosevelt Colvin being hurt this year. So just because a player, you know, in free agency as an outside linebacker doesn't mean the Patriots wouldn't take him. Can he play? Can he adapt? Can he, you know, do what they want him to do? And if they answer yes to all of those, then if he's been predominantly an outside linebacker, so what? They'll still go after him. By the way, thanks for listening. Thanks for sending the email. Boomer, who would you rather see in the Super Bowl, Pats, Packers, or Pats, Giants rematch? And if it is the Packers, do you think Favre will finally retire? I personally think he'll go five more years. I predict the day he retires. Okay, we'll leave that one for Eric. I think, honestly, I think we're going to get Patriots-Packers, honestly. But personally, I think I'm going to root for Pat's Giants just because of the whole regional thing. I don't know if that'll turn off the rest of the country or not because it'll be a whole New York, New England, Northeast type of Super Bowl. But then again, I think everybody watches the Super Bowl, even when it was, I-75 Super Bowl or, you know, I-5 Super Bowl with the Raiders and 49ers. I mean, you know, yeah, they talk about these regional matchups and how that's going to, you know, just, you know, isolate the rest of the country. I think that's baloney. I think the Super Bowl is an event that people, you know, plan their holidays around, their parties around, you know?
It's just for the commercials.
Yeah, just for the commercials, right. We watch it just for the commercials. I'm personally going to root for Pat's Giants. That's just my own personal preference, even though I think we'll get Pat's Packers. That answers your question. All right. Ken shares this with everyone here, so I'll get into it a little bit. Ken from Canton says, the Chargers do represent a more difficult challenge to the AFC CG than the Colts for a lot of reasons. The Chargers have the personnel to pressure Brady much better than Colt teams without Freeney. I would agree with that. Merriman and Phillips present a balanced attack of rushers on the outside, while Castillo, Olszanski, and Williams have the talent to create some pressure up the middle, making it difficult for Brady to step up. Without Freeney, the Colts couldn't generate a consistent pass rush, and playing Pats without a good pass rush is prescription for suicide, he says. Chargers have a legitimate running game regardless of who lines up in the backfield. Turner would be an improvement at running back for more than half the league. Besides, based on what I've heard today, that it's very likely LT will be as close to 100% for Sunday as any player who has gone through 17 NFL games. It would be 18 for the Chargers, however. Colts' running game has done the opposite of the Pats in that it had gotten progressively worse as the year came to an end. While the Chargers' passing attack doesn't come close to being the threat that the Colts' passing attack would have been, it is still good enough to pose a threat when you combine it with the run threat. It is certainly much better than it was in Week 2. Pat's special teams had a big advantage over the Colts. That advantage will not be nearly as big with the Chargers. This year, one of the reasons the Pats had such a good result against the Colts in Week 9 was the fact that the first time in 2 years the Pats had a full complement of defensive backs to play them. Think about it. How successful would that Colt offense have been that day if they hadn't gotten two phantom pass interference calls and the Pats chose that day to compound that with additional 90-plus yards and penalties? I think of the cold outdoors, the Colts would be hard-pressed to match the Pats offense under those conditions. Chargers with a solid running attack are better suited to have a consistent offensive threat. You know, so far, Ken, all of what you're saying is making sense. Then he goes on to say, this doesn't mean I think the Chargers are going to win on Sunday. Just the logistics alone make it difficult for the Chargers to win. Chargers will get home early Monday. 4 days later, they've got to take a 3,000-plus mile trip back east after two very physical games, just the opposite of the Pats last year, and we saw the effects of it in the second half of the 2006 AFC Championship game. Well, you know, again, your analysis is pretty good here, Ken, but I would also go back to, well, let's see, Patriots squeaked by the Colts, and they beat the crap out of the Chargers when they were here, even though it was a game here, 38-14. So I'm not sure what the relative merits of, the matchups really entail here. Honestly. It's a game they're going to have to go out and play in an effort to win. And the Patriots are going to have to pay attention to the Chargers. And they're going to have to realize that the Chargers had to have something right going for them in an effort to beat a Colts team, which by all rights and reasons should probably be here on Sunday. But they're not, because they were outplayed. That's the biggest one. Quayo from College Station, Texas. I really want LT and Rivers to play. One problem I have noticed about us is that we perform badly against players. We really don't have a lot of film off. This is a team that prides itself on preparation. I can bet my life that if Volek plays, he will be another AJ of the Eagles. Please stop saying that you don't see Volek causing harm. He says he's an Aggie. Jeez, Quayo, I'm sorry about that. Have you told your mother? You told your family? You come out of the closet yet? I'm very much like those guys in the ESPN commercials, the old guys in the, like the old guys in the nursing home, the one that's on the walker and he gets knocked over by the guy who's carrying the IV bag and wearing the Auburn and the Alabama shirts, you know, rivalries never die. They never die. Yes, I went to Texas. Volek plays, he'll be another AJ of the Eagles. Based on what? Based on what? One drive against the Colts? I don't see how anybody could possibly see Billy Volek causing harm based on one drive. Now, rest assured, the Patriots are going to prepare for him. They're also going to prepare for Phillip Rivers. But if it is ultimately Volek that takes the majority of the snaps on Sunday, the Patriots will be prepared for it. If Volek has a good game, well, then you give Volek some credit. But based on what we've seen to this point in time, Quayle, I don't know how you could possibly make that statement. Oh, I got it. You're an Aggie. That's how. Oh, okay. Got it. David in Abington, Virginia. John, so I want to hear you say it. You saw that Maroney and the Patriots can run. The Patriots would not have won without Maroney. Let me hear it.
I apologize 1,000 times to you. I'll get on my hands and knees. I misspoke.
No, I'm not going to say that. I think the Patriots could have won without Maroney, absolutely. Would they have won? Well, we'll never know. We'll never know. But, you know, Dave, if you did hear a little bit earlier in the show, maybe you just logged on, but I gave Lawrence Maroney all the props, and he deservedly so. He had a hell of a game. And again, my question and my problem with Maroney all season long hasn't been over his ability. I think he's got plenty of ability. It's been over his durability. Big difference in my mind. Big difference. You got to be healthy enough to stay on the field to show off your ability. I think he's had the ability. I think we've seen that. I question whether or not he has the durability. But he's played very well the latter part of the season. He's averaged, last three games, he's averaged well over 100 yards per game on the ground. So He's been great. He's been fabulous. He's given the Patriots, something that we didn't necessarily count on. He's given them other options. So if teams are going to, play soft, and this is what I think has happened here, and we saw this a little from Jacksonville this week, and I think we certainly saw it, with the Giants the previous week or, when they played 2 weeks ago. But fact is that teams are softening their defense somewhat, really. They're taking the receivers out of the equation. They're doubling and tripling on Moss, trying to take him out of the game. They're going to let a guy like Welker come over the middle and perhaps whip you or catch his fair share, and they're going to let Maroney have his. And what Maroney is doing now is he's getting his because opposing defenses are allowing him to get it, thinking, well, this is our best chance for success. We're still playing with fire, Scarecrow, but this is our best chance for success. And it hasn't worked because they've had guys like Maroney and Welker continue to step up. And this last week, you had Benjamin Watson step up. So now that the Patriots have a couple of relatively healthy tight ends back in the equation of Brady and Watson, being able to go over the middle and being able to help run block and seal block and allow Maroney to get around the corner, as I was talking about earlier, huge, huge factor. Huge factor in the Patriots' favor. Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Dave, for the email. Let's see. There was a fight. A Vermont man spent his 29th birthday. Somebody emailed this at a friend from the Attleboro Sun Chronicle. Vermont man spent his 29th birthday in a Boston hospital Monday with a fractured skull he suffered after allegedly being assaulted by a fellow fan at the Patriots playoff game. The victim was identified as David Singulaire of Windsor, Vermont. Medically induced coma at Brigham and Women's Hospital, where doctors drilled a hole in his skull to relieve pressure around his brain. Good Lord. I didn't see a fight. Did you, Jason? No. Honestly, I mean, it's horrible that things like this happen. Undoubtedly, they do from time to time, no matter where you go. From where I am, and I'm on about the 40-yard line right there with all the broadcast crews, and my windows are open, so I hear just about everything that goes on. I cannot remember a fight that I've seen in the stands in the last couple of years. I can't remember a big one to the extent where somebody might have gotten hurt without security jumping into the equation quickly. This is definitely the exception and not the rule. Not like, at old Foxborough Stadium years ago when they banned Monday Night Football around here because of all the fights in the stands and, all of the lewd behavior in public, going through neighborhoods and such after the games were over. No, it's vastly different. It's worlds apart. So I feel horrible that this fan would have been hurt in that kind of an instance, and certainly we hope for nothing but his speedy recovery. And I'm sure that the authorities took care of or will take care of whatever needs to be taken care of in the aftermath. Warren in the UK says, Chargers won because the Colts beat themselves again. I mean, over 400 yards for Manning, but those two interceptions and fumble by Harrison lost them the game. With those 21 points, the game's over. Pats don't make the same mistakes if Brady has anything near 400 yards, and then it's good night for the Chargers. I think the score next week will be in the region of 34-17, similar to the last game. Rivers may not throw three picks, but they will have many three and outs. Brady will make them pay for that. Warren in the UK. Thank you, Warren. All right, this one comes from... Again, we're not signing it. Oh, here we go. Jim in Florida. Thank you, Jim. He says, Hi, John. I think the Colts looked past the Chargers to New England and came up a little short. I hadn't thought about that, but honestly, I guess I could see that potentially happening. Colts might have looked a little past San Diego because of the task at hand, thinking that, home field advantage is going to get us through here, and we'll find a way to just get past the Chargers. And whether we win by one or by 21, it's not going to matter. Still have to go to New England, and the whole way that we can get back and defend our championship is by going through New England. And they probably felt like they had a little payback coming simply because of the way the Patriots came back and stole the game from them earlier this year in, that first weekend of November. Hadn't thought about it, but now that I think about it, sure. I would say that, human nature might be, Jim, that the Colts might have been looking past the Chargers, sure. Says they were on cruise control since assuring themselves the second seed, resting players, losing their edge, their focus and sharpness, and it ended up biting them in the butt because the Chargers just played harder and wanted it more. Okay, I'll buy that. Yeah, I was surprised Indy lost, but let's not make the same mistake Indy did and look past San Diego. They are playing great football, and Gates, Rivers, and LT, they'll be on the field on Sunday. Meanwhile, kudos to Brady on a magnificent game. I was leery he might have gotten a bit moss-happy as the season wore on, but Brady proved me wrong, and I couldn't be happier. What do you think? And by the way, he says Pats 31, Chargers 24. I share that same sort of concern, to be honest with you, Jim. I did think that Tom was getting a little moss-happy, especially late in the regular season when he was trying to throw into double and triple coverage. And, of course, it was explained to us that, well, you know, it's Randy Moss, you know, out there, and he's caught those balls before, so why wouldn't we want to give him the opportunity to do that again? But in the playoffs where turnovers are magnified many times over, they mean more in the playoffs because they can turn a game around on just one simple mistake, and we've seen that happen. Saw it happen this last weekend. I don't think you'll see the Patriots taking those kind of chances again. Moss was effectively taken out by Jacksonville last week. Patriots took what the Jaguars defense was giving them, and that's how they made Jacksonville pay. Same thing will have to happen against San Diego. It just depends on what poison San Diego chooses to defend and what they're going to allow the Patriots to have. My guess is that San Diego is going to try to put, and this is just an early guess, okay? This is Tuesday. Players aren't even practicing today, all right? They don't return to practice until tomorrow. They're game planning now, and then they're going to get presented the game plan tomorrow, and they'll start putting it into effect out on the practice field starting tomorrow. But just an early guess, I think the Chargers come after Brady. I think that they'll try to blitz him and blitz him and blitz him some more, and maybe blitz him a little more after that. I think you'll see Sean Merriman, you know, he'll be doing one of two things. He'll either be coming, I don't think he'll ever stand pat. He'll either be coming hard or he'll be dropping back into coverage. You know, in an effort to confuse the Patriots as much as they possibly can. That's my thought. I think they'll try to make Brady rush his throws and hope that the man coverage that Warren, you know, that a guy like Antonio Cromartie might be able to provide on a guy like Randy Moss can last for, you know, 10 yards or so. They're going to bank on their pressure getting to Brady and forcing him to make early decisions. That's going to be my guess, and I think that Patriots are going to have to prepare for that. Now, I may be wrong. Maybe ultimately the Chargers decide, you know, to go by the playbook that you know, the Jaguars used, that the Giants used, that the Ravens used, that the Eagles used, and the teams that came close. You know, they took basically one thing away from the Patriots and made the Patriots beat them another way. That seems to be a common thread in amongst all these teams. But the Patriots still ended up winning the game because they just had too much on offense. They are the perfect offensive team. That's why anybody who says, you know, oh, I don't know about the Patriots being, you know, the all-time team, you know, whatever, you just haven't watched enough football, okay? These teams are all good that the Patriots have played and beaten. They have all done a masterful job, in my estimation, of game planning to the point where they take a considerable amount of the game away from the Patriots, and the Patriots still have enough depth, talent, and ability to win. It's because they have players that can make plays. And when you take one out of the equation, they have other players that can make plays. This Patriots offense is the best of all time in the National Football League. I don't think I'm underscoring that. I don't think I'm soft-pedaling it. It is the best of all time. Forget the fact that they've scored more points than any other team in history. Forget the fact they've scored more touchdowns than any other team in history. Forget the fact that Tom Brady's thrown for more touchdowns than any other quarterback in history in a single season. Forget all of that. This team is the best offensive team of all time because anytime you take somebody out, there's always somebody else that picks up the slack. That's why this team is going to go down if they, as long as they win these last two and don't shoot themselves in the foot. And quite frankly, I think it's the only way they lose. That's why it's going to go down as the greatest of all time, because they've got answers. They've got answers to the questions that everybody asks. Well, can they beat this? And the answer to that is, yes, they can. Well, can they beat this if we take away that? The answer is, yes, they can. And they've done it time and time again. I think that'll probably continue on Sunday. Now, can they lose the game? They absolutely can, because the team can beat itself. And with all due respect to the Chargers, you have to be at least a good enough team to take advantage of a team that beats itself. There are teams out there that are mediocre or worse, that if the Patriots handed the game to them on a silver platter, they would not be in a position to take advantage of that because they're just not good enough. The Chargers are good enough. The Colts are good enough. I don't know that either the Giants or the Packers, the two teams left in the NFC, I don't know that they're good enough. But I can tell you that the Colts were, and I certainly know that now the Chargers are. And if the Patriots turn the ball over two or three times and they turn it over with the Chargers having a short field to work with, then, yeah, the Patriots can lose it. But if you put these two teams up, even Steven, against each other and let them slug it out like Rock'em Sock'em Robots, ain't happening. You know, with all things being equal, no mistakes, no penalties, no turnovers, Chargers can't stay with them. And I think they know that. They have to create opportunities for themselves, which is why I'm saying, you know, I personally think that they'll try to get the Patriots to gamble. I think they'll try to get the Patriots to take some chances. I think they'll try to get the Patriots to operate out of their comfort zone. That's just my thought. I mean, it's go for broke here. I mean, what the hell do they have to lose? They're two touchdown underdogs already anyway. What do they have to lose here? They have nothing to lose. They have everything to gain. You might as well put your best foot forward. Absolutely. This one comes from John in New Hampshire. What do you say just for laughs? We play and beat the Chargers before we talk about the Super Bowl. Chargers are playing nice in the media. I don't buy it. I don't think they respect us at all. I don't think they respect anyone. The way they act during games is more indicative than their fairy tale speeches to the press. They yell at fans. They yell at opposing teams after games. They're the biggest bunch of whiny, poor sports that happen to have a good football team. By the way, Philip Rivers going up to the stands after the game, you know, enjoying with the fans and the Colts fan flipping him off. I mean, you know, why? I realize you get involved in the heat of the moment and the competitor in you. You know, you want to lash out, but I mean, you got to have some composure there. And there are many of you, and rightfully so. And I listened a little bit of this during PFW in Progress earlier, a concern with Rodney Harrison and some of his, you know, late hit penalties and you know whatnot. And I think you have to realize again that that's who Rodney is. He was that way when he was a Charger, and he's that way when he is a Patriot. And I think you have to hope that, you know, when he does that, and he's going to do it, when he does it, it doesn't hurt you in the overall scheme of things. It hasn't so far. And I'm sure that his teammates and his coaches have already talked to him about that. But I think with Rodney, what you see is what you get. But, you know, the thing that Rivers did this last weekend, I mean, come on, that's just, that wasn't necessary. You just induced that behavior is what you did by going over there and paying attention to it. I guarantee you, Patriots fans, the ones especially that sit in front of me, right in behind the team bench, the opposing team's bench, they will get after Philip Rivers this week. They'll get after him. They're really good at it, too. And frankly, I would encourage you. I'd encourage you to do it. If I'm sitting in the stands, I'd do it, too. Because it clearly gets into their heads. Clearly bothers them. Why else would he have reacted the way he did? Now, he reacted the way he did because I'm guessing that those Indy fans taunted him the whole game, and he was just giving it back to them because of the fact that they were winning the game there at the end. I'd give it to him. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Says, let's see. Again, I don't buy it. I think they're taking a page out of the patch book and pretending to be a class act. Sorry, LaDainian, calling yourself a class act doesn't make it true. Actions speak louder than words. I'll put money on the fact that come game time, the big mouths will fly wide open once again. Bottom line, this Patriots team is too disciplined, too focused, too dedicated to be lulled into a false sense of security, and they will hit hard, they will score big, and they will win. And then we can talk about the big game. He says, Pats 38, Chargers 24. Thanks, John, for the email. All right, let's see. This one comes from Howard John, who is nitpicking. He says, there's always room for improvement. Sometimes the cornerbacks seemed out of position. Not all the time, but it happened more than I want to see. That's precisely what I was talking about, John. Absolutely. Cornerbacks were out of position. They were playing soft. They weren't up on the receivers. They were allowing the receivers to get into their break on their patterns, which allowed a guy like Garrard to make pinpoint accurate passes. That's why he was what? What was it, Garrard? 16 for his first 18? 15 for his first 18? I think at halftime, before the Patriots made adjustments. Ended up 22 for 33, I think it was. So you can see the second half, definite difference from the first half. Yeah, I think they were definitely out of position. Give them credit, though. They made the adjustments. They held him to 6 second-half points. Jack from Boston says, okay, so it's starting to look like this. Ellis Hobbs is fast but short, and they seem to throw over him. Randall Gay is tall but slow and gives way too much of a cushion. So we need someone tall and fast. We need Randy Moss for cornerback. Is that kind of like to Bucky Jones for cornerback? Remember that a few years ago when Pete Carroll tried to insist he could be a cover corner because he was big and fast? See, I don't know. I think you can have one or the other. I don't think you can have both. I'm just not sure that both exists. It may. Cromartie is probably close to that. I'm impressed with him. He's obviously had a hell of a year. He didn't even start against the Patriots when they played in Week 2 here in Foxborough. I'm looking forward to that matchup, to be quite honest with you. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope we see him on Moss and whether or not, you know, he can stay with Randy one-on-one, because I think San Diego will take that chance. I think they'll take that chance so they can put all their eggs in another basket. And by that, I mean putting pressure on Tom. I really do. I really do. That's just my initial inclination. We'll read some more. We'll talk some more. We'll listen some more over the next couple of days. But as of Tuesday game week, that's my initial inclination. Dave, again, in Abington, Virginia, says, I know that I do not watch San Diego much, but what I saw that stuck out at me. I think that game was their Super Bowl. Maybe we call it 41 and three quarters. Jackson on San Diego going against Hobbs. He is taller. He knows how to use his body. Yeah, Vincent Jackson does worry me. I will give you that. Vincent Jackson, I think, is in combined now with Chris Chambers on the other end. Of course, Chambers was traded from Miami to San Diego after the Patriots played. So, yes, there's no doubt it is a different San Diego team than was here way back on Week 2. No doubt. It's an interesting set of circumstances that have changed things around. He says, Cromartie is San Diego's Asante. I don't know his name, but number 43, he's only 5'6", and so dang fast. That would be Darren Sproles. It's true. 5'6", all of about 170 pounds, and he's just unbelievably fast. He did that when he was at Kansas State. You know, he was a tailback at Kansas State. And, you know, I don't know that he certainly wouldn't be an every down back. He didn't have the size. He'd probably, you know, get batted around like a ping pong ball or a pinball. But, boy, you cut him loose, he gets a block. He's dangerous. I thought one of the things that I thought the Patriots did very well against Jacksonville that really, I don't know, got a lot of play was the fact that on kickoffs and special teams, Steven Gostkowski angled the kickoffs toward the sideline to allow the Patriots special teams to be able to cut off the field on a guy like Maurice Jones-Drew. That was a smart, smart thing to do. It only gives him one way he can go. And I think you'll see more of that against San Diego. I can't imagine that you wouldn't. Because if you're kicking off to a guy like Sproles, all he needs is one little block, one little seam, and boom, he's gone. I think you should probably look for more of that. And I think you probably, if the Patriots do punt the ball, and of course they didn't punt the ball until, what, 40 seconds left in the game on Saturday night. But if we see Hanson out there in a punting situation earlier in the game, again, I think the same thing goes. If you got Sproles out there in a position to return a kick, I think you'll see him angle for the sideline no matter where he is. No matter where the field position is, I think you'll see him try to angle the kick where it's not in the middle of the field, so it only gives him really one way to go. And that way, that's how you can best give your special teams an odds-on chance to limit big plays. He says, finally, Norv Turner, not afraid to take chances. No doubt about that. I mean, that's what made Norv such a good offensive coordinator. He's not afraid to take chances. He says, P.S., if San Diego re-signs LT, will their name be STD now? Ha! Oh, brother. Bad joke is right. Thanks for that, David. Appreciate that. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania. I don't know what he's sending me. He sent me a link to something, so I'll listen to it later. Pratt in Germantown, Maryland, says, John, I admire how the Chargers won their game on Sunday. I don't mean to be a poor man's Russell Baxter here, but with the sound being pumped into the RCA Dome and tons of penalties on the Chargers, which cost them lots of yards, and yet beating the Colts by 4 points, when have we seen this before? That's right, John. Week 9 of the regular season. Patriots beat Indy by 4 points, being heavily penalized and some very questionable calls for over 100 yards. So this matchup is great to me, as we get to see the Chargers who did the exact same thing the Patriots did, only the Chargers played well throughout the game. And that's why we saw many lead changes between the Colts and Chargers. Now, the reason why I see the Patriots as clear winners of San Diego is simply their healthy, durability, compared to the very same factors on the Patriots side. I'm pretty certain there will be some times of uncertainty, especially if Sean Merriman swings around and sacks Brady early in the game and does his lights-out dance. But clearly it will take a lot more from the Chargers' defense to totally shut down the Patriots' offense. Our weakness is certainly our defense. However, they will rise to the occasion and play a hard game in order to do enough to contain what looks to be a more balanced Charger team than we've seen before. But if the backups like Volek or Turner play, I honestly cannot give them much of a chance to even think about pulling an upset, so I predict another 11-point victory for the Pats. We should prepare ourselves to crown the Patriots as four-time AFC champions in the Brady-Belichick era. Thank you, Pratt, from Germantown, Maryland. There's a lot of truth to what you have to write. I think if the backups like Volek or Turner play exclusively, I think it'll be easier for the Patriots to make adjustments because, quite frankly, they're backups for a reason. They're not quite as good. They're good. They're not quite as good as the starters. That's why they're backups. So in theory, you should be able to adjust to them a little easier, maybe a little sooner. So while early, you know, as long as you can withstand any sort of early momentum that the opposing team has, like you did against Jacksonville this last Saturday, and you let the game play it out, you let your talent play itself out, you let the game move on through the normal course of events, and as long as you don't shoot yourself in the foot, it'll be an inevitability. That's usually what happens with teams that are better from top to bottom on the roster. Pratt also says, I wanted to point out also an interesting statistic I heard watching ESPN. With the exception of the Giants-Cowboys divisional game and all the other playoff games, the team which scored first in the game went on to lose the game. That's interesting. I did not see that, Pratt. Thank you for that. Once again, the Giants are the only team that has defied that pattern. It'll be interesting to see if that pattern picks up again. We just might have to let the Chargers get a touchdown to start the game. Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it. All right, let's get another timeout in here, and there's still time for you to contribute to the show. We've been all emails all the time today because everybody's just pouring them in, and that's okay. I like doing that. Sometimes I don't like listening to the sound of my own voice, but you know what? Basically, what I'm doing is talking about what you have to talk about. I am using your words here and then trying to consider it. And everybody's got something to say, not only on the Jacksonville game, but on the upcoming matchup with San Diego, and so that's fine. So let's continue that. There's still time for you to get your emails in today. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. The telephone number, 508-543-7482. If you want to call in, talk radio style, we can do that as well. We're here inside the playbook.
When you got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today.
Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
See, now it works. I like this song, by the way. It's a good song. We played this in the stadium a lot on Saturday, didn't we? A couple of times, I think. Twice. See? I listen. I like this Springsteen song.
Funny that you listen to the music and not to your cues. It works out good.
What are you saying?
I'm not saying anything.
I'm not paying attention to you guys? Brooke, read the spot! Welcome back as we continue inside Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com radio. Web radio at Patriots.com is the email address. Hey, coming up in just a couple of moments, we're going to hear from Wes Welker, who earlier today met with members of the Patriots media here at Gillette. And we really haven't had a lot of chance. We've been inside the locker room on a couple of occasions this year where we talked to a lot of different guys and our Patriots Playbook staff, Minnie Gary in particular, doing a super job of getting in the locker room to talk to the guys so you get a chance to hear from the guys during the course of the week. But we had a chance to really kind of get in depth with Welker and get his thoughts on playing in his first playoff game and getting his first playoff touchdown and being, obviously having the kind of year that he has had and setting a franchise record for catches in a single season and such. So I want to bring that to you here in just a couple of moments just so we can kind of get you ready for that, because here's a guy who's had a tremendous year. He's a great example of, if you can't beat him, sign him. Patriots never could stop the guy when he was with the Dolphins. And so when he became available, they swing a deal, they trade with Miami. What a stupid, stupid move on Miami's part. Because he's been invaluable to this team. I really believe that, if you look between the lines, there may not be any more valuable a player for what he has done to this team than Wes Welker. I mean, yes, certainly he's right. Tom Brady is the MVP, and Randy Moss has had a heck of a year, and you can certainly point to one or two other guys, but Welker has got to be right up there at the top of the list. Scott in Washington, D.C. says, friend of mine joked this weekend that Josh McDaniels has an envelope labeled, do not open until playoffs. Sure looked like he tore it open and used what was inside on Saturday night with that great touchdown to Welker with Brady's fantastic play fake to Falk. That was great. By the way, I've looked at that play two or three times. I still don't see the ball getting hiked to Tom. I haven't stopped it frame for frame yet. I'm getting ready to do that next. I don't know how Brady got the ball. It looks like it was snapped right to Falk on a direct snap. And that the Jaguars had it snuffed out. Unbelievable. And Tom was right in the postgame. I'm waiting for my Academy Award on that one. That was as good a play fake as I've seen on any single play in a long, long time. Scott says, now I'm hoping that Dean Pease has a similar envelope for this weekend. I really want to see a mad rush of blitzes, but I worry about it because the Patriots are a bit older on defense, and I don't want the all-out rush tactic to wear our guys down too early. I also worry about that big San Diego offensive line, and I have to think back to our win over Dallas to try to remember how we attacked such a mammoth set of guys. Do you think the Chargers' injuries actually make this a tough game for Belichick to game plan against? He can take one thing away from you, but not knowing whether to focus on LT or Rivers, depending on who's healthy, could make the Patriots play a little sit back early on to see what San Diego is trying to do. Looking forward to a good week leading up to the big game. Thank you, Scott. You know what? I actually agree with you. I think the Chargers' injuries are going to make it a little tougher, at least initially, to game plan. I agree with that assessment. They'll say that, you know, we're going to game plan for, you know, LT, and we're going to game plan for Rivers, and then that's what they're going to start out. But they also have to have a condition plan. I mean, they have to make sure that, you know, well, if it's not LT and it is Turner, what does Turner do differently from LT that we need to be ready for? Same thing for Volek. What does Volek do differently that Rivers does or doesn't do? They have to be ready for that eventuality. So my guess is they game plan for a perfectly healthy Chargers team, Scott, and then they'll have to see how the game progresses, see who starts, see who gets subbed in, you know, in the first, after the first series, that sort of thing. And then, as I mentioned earlier in the program today, the biggest thing that I think the Patriots have really not had success with lately is adjusting on the fly. I mean, they made great halftime adjustments this last weekend. I want to see in-game adjustments. I think this team is capable. We've seen it before. Why do we wait till halftime? I think that'll be a key. I think they're going to have to make some in-game adjustments to ensure they stay ahead of the Chargers this weekend. I think that's going to happen. All right, Pat says, sup, John? Sup, Pat? I hear people talking about how Watson and Stallworth. He says, sup. I'm saying, sup. You know, I can be hip on occasion. Of course, every time I do it, though, my son Austin at home goes, Dad, and he rolls his eyes in the back of his head. He goes, you are so not cool.
Such an idiot.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm, you know, I want to be up with people, you know?
You're doing a good job, John.
Thank you. Sup. Goof. He says, Stallworth, Watson have not been as productive as much expected. I agree about Watson, but it seems to me that Stallworth, for some reason, hasn't had as many opportunities to make plays. It's almost like every time he catches the ball, the first defender never tackles him and gets lots of yak. Plus, he's fast as hell. Yeah, he caught the 53-yarder, but that third down play where he slipped a tackle and dove for the first down really sealed the deal for the game. That's a good point. That was, I think, an even bigger catch by Stallworth. I'll agree with you there, Pat. It looks like if the McDaniels tries to get him the ball more often in screens and reverses and stuff, he could break a long one. I really don't think he's as bad as people say he is. He just needs the ball in his hands. Okay, no, you know, you make some good points, Pat. My guess is that a guy like Stallworth is going to have an opportunity. Again, if the Chargers decide to subscribe to the same defensive philosophies as the other pretenders have this year, those that have gotten close, they've taken one thing away from the Patriots, and it's forced other people to step up. Stallworth could end up being the step up. You could argue that he was part of that step up process on Saturday, based on those two catches that you talked about, Pat. Absolutely. Quayo from College Station writes back. He says, I really believe Tom Brady was angry with Stallworth for a while. I was looking at the Indy game again, and I saw that Stallworth didn't do enough to prevent his first pick in the game. Brady takes personal grudges with receivers who don't try to prevent interceptions. It's a milder issue if the ball is tipped, but to do nothing is atrocious in Brady's eyes when he sees the film. So if Stallworth is running his mouth about not getting the ball, he said sarcastically to some reporters that he guesses he can't get open anymore. I believe he should check that game and see why. All right, interesting point of view. John in Fayetteville, Georgia. John, excellent analysis of the game. You were spot on for the play of the game. I felt the same way when I saw the strip sack fumble recovery. Don't you just love Mike Vrabel? He is always around the ball and has had a career year. He and Ty Warren could be the Pats' defensive players of the year, without a doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that Vrabel is the defensive MVP for this team. Warren is close. He had a better first half of the year than the second half of the year, in my estimation, but I think that's because a lot of teams paid more attention to Seymour once Seymour got healthy again. But Vrabel has been a constant throughout the course of the year. He has been the sole MVP of that Patriots defense. Without a doubt, it's a slam dunk. He says, okay, my thoughts on the 2008 draft. I seriously doubt that Chris Long will be around for the seventh pick, but I think he would be a great pick if he lasts that long, no pun intended. What do you think of Mike Jenkins from South Florida and Terrell Thomas from Southern Cal? I don't think we'll see Asante Samuel around next year. These guys are pretty decent cornerbacks. I've seen Mike Jenkins from USF. I think he's pretty good, and I agree with you. I think he would at least – based on what I've seen, I saw him play two, three times in person this year. I think he could certainly become a replacement, someone that I'm guessing they would take a shot at. But with the 7 pick overall, no way. There's no way that they're going to take a corner that high. I don't see that happening. I just don't see that happening. If Long is there, my guess is Long is the one that gets taken. But, if the value isn't there for the pick, then, I think the Patriots will do what the Patriots have always done. They'll trade down till they can find value for what it is that they want with that particular position. Dagmar from Miami. John, I'd like to say that my favorite part of the last game was to be able to see our tight ends back at work. Once again, Falk showed why he is a franchise player. I personally wanted the Colts to be the match for the AFC Championship game, but if the Chargers bought that ticket, so be it. Chargers may show some changes since their two offensive stars are under question for the game. LT and Rivers, will they play? Well, it doesn't matter. There are plenty more players on that team that may step up, make the plays, and the Patriots shall prepare for that. Keep it up, John. I hope the weather gives us a break for the game. Well, now, what kind of a break do you want, Dagmar? Do you want good weather or do you want bad weather? See, I favor bad weather because that makes it should, in theory, make it tougher for the opposing team, right? The early forecast for the game, 15, cold.
I saw 19.
I saw 15 earlier today.
Either way, you're making me shiver, buddy.
I know. Well, hey, my windows are open. Okay.
Much this to the, is true.
Nobody by the way, much to the chagrin of the clock operators, because for those of you that don't know, I'm going to let you in on a little insight here. All right. This is how they work it in the NFL, because the clock operators who are in the same booth as I am at the stadium, they are actually hired by the league, even though, you know, they come to every game and they, you know, live locally and such. They're actually employees of the NFL. They're not hired by the team. Well, for the playoffs, those who are hired by the team are not eligible to run the clock for the home team. So what the National Football League does is they bring in clock operators from nearby franchises to make sure that there is no chance of any kind of clock controversy. You know, no home field advantage, no letting the clock hang on for an extra second. No, they did not come from the Meadowlands. They have in the past, but they did not this time. These two gentlemen were from Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, believe it or not. Oh, now what are you going to find? He's searching for another drop. To any Steelers fans listening, you all suck.
Wow.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate that, buddy.
Guess I'm a little too predictable.
Yes, I know. You've been doing it way too long. I know. What is this, year seven for us now? Not for you specifically, but it is for the show. And this is your fourth year? Yeah, that's what I thought. So what they do is they bring in clock operators from other teams for the playoffs. So we had two gentlemen from Pittsburgh, Al and Jerry. Great guys. But when, you know, I got there late because I had a college basketball game on Saturday, and so my game was at 4. My broadcast was over at 6:30. Got into the traffic. I actually got here in about an hour. So I made it with about 10 minutes to spare before we started pregame announcements, and everything was cool. I was very happy with that.
You were perfect.
Well, it timed out well. Sometimes, like I say, Jace, it's better to be lucky than good, and we were definitely lucky. But when I got into the booth, the windows were closed, and it was like a sauna in there. Everybody had their coats off and everything, and I turned and I looked at our scoreboard, our operator, Terry McGuan, who is allowed to do the scoreboard, but you're not allowed to have, you know, same people do the clock because of the timing and all that kind of stuff. So I turned to look at Terry and I said, well, this is never going to do. This is just not going to happen. Well, we got to open the windows. And so the two guys from Pittsburgh looked at me horrified, absolutely horrified. Said, you're going to what? Especially one of the guys who didn't bring his jacket into the press box. One of them did, the other did not. I said, look, I got to be able to hear. I have to be able to hear, you know, the crowd. I have to be able to hear the officials because, you know, the PA system that we have in our booth gets drowned out quite a bit in the referee's mic. Doesn't hardly ever work at all anyway. So we need to be able to hear it over the speakers in the stadium to ensure that we can actually hear the officials call. Plus, we need to hear and make sure that the messages that I'm getting are actually getting out. I think it's a smart thing. Plus, as a football broadcaster, and I've done football on radio and television for more than 20 years as a play-by-play guy, I've always had the windows open. It just makes you feel like you're part of the game, a part of the crowd. You know, I've never tried to do it from a studio environment. Now, there have been some games where it's been bitterly cold, where I've had a wuss for a partner, that I've said, all right, we'll close the windows, but I've hated every second of it. And in 15 years of doing the public address at Foxborough and now Gillette Stadiums, I can tell you exactly two games, that those windows have been closed. One was in Old Foxborough. because the rain was blowing right in on us. And there was too much equipment there, and we could all die from electrical shock. The second one was the last Miami game of this year, because we had a steady rain mist blowing in with the way the wind was coming. Usually the wind, it doesn't ever factor, and so if it's raining, we can keep the windows open because it doesn't come in on us. But it came in on us, so we had to close it. And I was miserable the whole game. It was cold, but it was bearable.
I think I was pretty soaked that game.
I think everybody was. But with 15 degrees coming
Dan
up this
especially,
Sunday,
since he doesn't believe in a raincoat.
No. Well, you better know. 15 degrees coming up this Sunday, I can almost guarantee, doggone to you, the windows will be open. The heaters will be blasting. You know, so your feet will be nice and warm. Your face will be frozen. That'll be the dichotomy of the weekend. But that's what's going to happen. So, I mean, you have to know that the colder the weather, the worse off you would think that it would be for San Diego. Luis in Tampa. John, hope you're doing well. Excellent show. Thank you. He says, for Nitpicking Tuesday, how about the fact that opposing quarterbacks turned into Y.A. Tittle when playing the Patriots? Think about it. Feely, Bowler, Manning, Garrard, those guys are not known as accurate quarterbacks, but against the Pats, they look terrific. So I'm concerned about the lack of pass rushing. One quick question. Is it fair to compare Tony Romo to Danny White as a great regular season quarterback? I think you still got to give Romo a little more time before you compare him to anybody. I mean, I think it's unfair to say he's a playoff flop, even though he hasn't won one. He's only been the full-time quarterback for a couple of years at Dallas. Comparing him to Danny White, that's the first time I've actually heard that, but I'm sure there's some Cowboy fans that are actually doing that now. I always thought Danny White was a vastly underrated quarterback anyway. As far as the Patriots, well, you know, those guys are accurate against the Patriots because the Patriots are allowing them to be accurate. Again, they're giving the teams that they've played X while hopefully taking away Y. And in the cases of Feely and Bowler and Eli Manning, Y almost beat them. Less so against the Jacksonville Jaguars this past weekend with Garrard. So I think you've got to be careful with what you allow a team to have. I think that's the biggest thing you got to be worried about. Okay, this one is, let's see, who's this? Alex says, what a great weekend for football that was. I have one question regarding each game. When you squander a 14-point lead on the road like Seattle did, who's to blame, the coach or the players? Well, I don't know. I don't think there's equal blame on that one. It's not a cop-out. I just think you can blame the – I think it's tough to blame the coach because the coach gives you the game plan. You get out to a lead, and then you lose the lead. So I think you can certainly say, well, the coach didn't adjust, but then the players didn't carry out the plan completely either. Number two, what type of coverage did the Jags use to take away Moss? Based on what I saw, it was simple man coverage with help from the safety. So it was really just, you know, you had safety help, you know, playing a zone, two-deep zone most of the way. I don't think it was anything fancy. When it's all said and done, will we say that Manning was a choker who got lucky one year? Talking about Peyton Manning, I assume? No. No. I mean, you know, Alex, you got to look. I mean, come on. You've watched Peyton, and I know you may be nauseated at some of his commercials like a lot of people are, but the fact is the guy's a great quarterback. No, he's not a choker. It wasn't his fault. Not necessarily. I mean, for instance, he was without, you know, Harrison most of the season. What it does do is I think it shows that Tom Brady is every bit as good, if not better, than Manning because, you know, now this is the first year that Brady's had comparable weapons that what Manning has had leading up to this year, right? And then he says, watching Marion Barber's performance in the second half, should we think that he and Maroney are a 15 to 18 carries type of back? Yeah, I'd agree with that. They split time their one year together at Minnesota based on my recollection. Yeah, 15 to 18 carries, I think they're both those type of backs. Absolutely. Okay, this one comes from Fast in St. Catharines, Ontario. I believe the Patriots were the highest blitzed team in the NFL. So if that's the Chargers' blueprint, good luck with that. I agree with you. I just think that that's what they're going to do because I think they're cocky enough to believe that it can work. And Jeff from Ohio says, is it just me or is big number 93 playing horribly? I hope his great career is not on the downhill slope. He has not looked good this year, and in these playoffs he has been nearly invisible. I noticed Jarvis Green playing more in the second half of Jacksonville. Am I off base on this? A little, Jeff. I don't think he's playing horribly at all. In fact, I would suggest the opposite. I think he's probably now in game shape as best as he's ever been this year. The reason that he has been somewhat invisible is because what the Patriots have asked him to do is they've asked him to absorb blockers so the linebackers can make plays. That's why you see Teddy Bruschi as the leading tackler on this team. Seymour is taking on two blockers on every snap of the football. At least two, sometimes more. So he's taking up the attention of the offensive line. Well, we just teased that, though. Is it all right if we just go ahead and start it? And okay, you know, we just teased that. I'll get through this point, and we'll make it faster. The thing is that he's taking up all of these players to the point where it's allowing other players to come in and do their job and make those plays. So I don't think he's been playing horribly. He just hasn't been. He's not an up the field pass rush kind of guy. That's not what the Patriots are asking him to do. And Peter in Northampton says, John, with all the talk of Benjamin Watson and Lawrence Maroney not living up to expectations, I think that Brandon Merriweather is the biggest bust as a first-round pick. Do you agree? No, absolutely not. I don't agree. Peter, have you noticed he's playing more and more in nickel and dime packages? He played quite a bit this last weekend against Jacksonville. Far from it. I think he's learning. And I think he's going to continue to get more time. So I think you need to kind of pay attention to, you know, Merriweather out there in the field. By bust, you're going to have to give me a couple of examples of what you've seen out there to tell me that that's why you think he's been a bust. Anything but. I just think he might have come along a little bit more slowly than some others. But bust? No way. Absolutely no way. And plus, guys in his first year, I don't think you can say a bust about any first-round draft pick definitively, either A, unless you cut him, or B, you've given him at least two full seasons to adjust and learn. And if he still doesn't get it after a couple of years, then it means he's got enough chances. Then you might say, okay, he's a disappointment. But bust? Nah. Nah. We're not watching the same team. We're not watching the same guy. All right, let's wrap up the program today by letting you listen in to Wes Welker with members of the Patriots media from earlier at Gillette Stadium and get his thoughts on not only his first playoff game and first playoff win, of course, this past weekend against Jacksonville, but maybe some initial thoughts as well on San Diego in the AFC Championship coming up at Gillette this Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. We'll have more of the playbook, same Pats time, same Pats channel tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time right here on Patriots.com radio. Here now is Wes Welker.
Just give your thoughts on San Diego's defense.
You know, they're a very athletic group. You know, they run around the football really well, get to the quarterback really well. They got big, fast, strong defensive backs, and we're definitely going to have our hands full with all of them.
It seems Cromartie's made a huge difference there with his playmaking. Do you see that on the film? Do they change when you get in the lineup?
You know, he's definitely a great player back there, you know, and he has great ball skills. He's really fast, and he's done a great job of shutting some guys down, and you know, he's a ball hawk, and he's, you know, definitely making a lot of plays out there for him.
Does the cold weather on Sunday present any special challenges catching the football?
You know, I don't think so. You know, we've had some practices where it's been pretty cold, and, you know, we've gotten some work in those areas, so we just got to make sure we're out there focusing and you know, looking the ball in and make sure we're securing it.
Wes, how much pride do you guys take in the fact that you guys had the fewest amount of turnovers in the league this year?
You know, I think, you know, as far as the season goes, you know, it was something that we wanted to be, you know, good at this year, and we were able to do it, and we just got to, you know, keep it going throughout the playoffs.
As far as Tom and his interception rate, what makes him so good about avoiding interceptions as a quarterback in terms of throwing it to places that only you guys can catch the ball?
He's a smart player, you know, and, I mean, he knows the defenses. He knows where guys are going to be. He, you know, and if we're not in the right place, he's going to let us know about it and make sure we're, you know, hitting on all cylinders and making things happen.
What do you see about them that causes them to be so good at forcing turnovers?
You know, they're a physical group, and they have a great rush. You know, their front seven is one of the best out there. And then on top of that, you know, they have defensive backs who you know, get around the football really well and know that they're going to get a good rush and are able to, you know, make some plays on the ball and do a great job of doing that.
Considering where you were this time last year, what does it mean to you to be in a game that's going to decide whether you're going to go to the Super Bowl or not?
You know, I really don't think about that too much. You know, I'm just kind of concentrated on where we're at right now and trying to focus on, you know, getting ready for this week and make sure I'm doing everything I can to prepare in that regard.
Wes, the fans and the media nationally are, you know, they've been talking, they're surprised that it's not the Patriots or the Colts, but listening to the coach today and some of the players, you guys aren't surprised that the Chargers went in to beat Indianapolis, are you?
No, not at all. I mean, they've been the best football team, especially this latter part of the season. And I mean, they've done a great job of, you know, winning some games. And they've, you know, blown a lot of people out, especially later on in the season. So, you know, they're playing their best football right now. And that's, you know, that's what you have to do, especially in this league, is, you know, play well in December and January.
They are different than the last time you faced them. But how are you guys different than when you faced them last time? How have you guys grown as a team?
I think, you know, as the season goes on, you know, you get more acclimated to the offense or defense or whatever side of ball you're playing, and you just, you know, make sure you're getting better, you know, and that's what it's all about. I think every player and every team gets better as the season goes on, and you know, hopefully, you know, that's enough for us to be able to come and play well this Sunday.